Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us, and we also ask you to visit our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Andy Nelson.
Elena Huber.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
And then we decided, where do we go from here?
To Elena, and we explained
Elena,
why she's here.
You're running for a local office. We appreciate your willingness to serve. Can you give us a little bit of your background?
Sure. I am running for Alderman Ward 1 in the beautiful downtown area of New Bern, North Carolina. I have been in this area in Eastern North Carolina off and on since 2002 due to the military. I'm a retired 22-year Navy veteran. I joined the Navy right after college. I was also a military brat growing up, so didn't really have a hometown. So I got to pick my hometown, and I chose New Bern. And so that's where we're at now. And I, after graduating college, joined the Navy as a Navy nurse during Operation Iraqi Freedom, OIF. I was trained as an ER nurse, then a combat trauma nurse. 2004, with needs of the Navy, they sent me to training for forensic medicine. And those are nurses that will do forensic exams on not so great if victims of crime, basically. People like victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, strangulation, and so I can do that. And then so I kept going with that. And of course, if anyone's familiar with the military, the higher rank you get, the more responsibility. So I was still practicing as a nurse, but also took on a lot of administrative roles. And with my forensic background, while I was stationed up in the D.C. area, I served as the expert advisor on forensic medical management to the Commandant of the Marine Corps, as well as the Navy Surgeon General. So I advised them on any cases, high-profile cases, or just any cases that they needed during that. Ended up back here at Cherry Point for my Twilight Tour, the last tour, and was Director of Public Health while I was still doing forensic exams during that time, too. It was a challenging time at Cherry Point during that time. It was right after Hurricane Florence. We had a lot of damage to the base, and also COVID in 2020. So as Director of Public Health, you can imagine I stayed pretty busy. And I'm married to Michael Huber, retired colonel. He was the commanding officer of Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point. First husband and wife team that actually had to work together, because normally we wouldn't. B and I was, in the medical part, but because of COVID and me being Director of Public Health, we got to work together. And so that means we were always talking shop at home and at work. But during our marriage, we've raised 5 wonderful children. We've got our oldest, Caitlin, and she's married and has our 2 grandbabies. They live in Cumming, Georgia. She's in real estate. Our other daughter, Ashley, lives in Marietta. They ended up in Georgia, both of them. And she's a talent acquisitions manager, and she's getting married this fall. And then our middle daughter, Sarah, is at in Pensacola. She was commissioned as an ensign in the Navy, and she's at flight school. And so she is going to be a Navy pilot and earn her wings of gold soon. And then our twins, Nathan and Lily, are both rising high school seniors. Lily is at the Epiphany School of Global Studies. Both of them were, but Nathan, he's our little smarty pants. He got selected to go to North Carolina School of Science and Math. And so he's actually at the Morganton campus. They have one in Durham and Morganton, and he's there and absolutely thriving. So we're starting to look at colleges for those two, and so they're the last two on the payroll right now. I retired here, and Michael and I decided we bought a historic home downtown. We're right across the street from Michael's Pub and Patio at 207 Pollock Street, and anytime anybody's in the neighborhood, love to stop by, and I can tell them about what my vision is.
Why did you decide to run?
So one thing that I learned in the Navy, and anybody that served in the military, Patricia, you may have heard this before, had a Navy chief told me that if you have time to lean, you have time to clean.
And the Air Force doesn't work.
We don't.
Way.
Yeah, y'all are maids, right? Y'all have housekeeping.
Yeah.
So, but I took that as a bigger stance, and kind of like a roadmap for life. If you've got time to give back, then you should. I have that time now. I've had my career. I've pretty much raised my family, and I love New Bern. And I've, you know, seen some of the things, the great things that our current mayor's doing. Some things that, you know, our last alderman that, you know, just kind of wasn't as present as much. And I'm hoping that I can have that availability. And so I want to give back. I want to give back to New Bern. I want to help the citizens of Ward 1 and work together with the other aldermen to continue making it the place where, you know, where everybody wants to come visit.
Now, what do you see as the three most important challenges facing New Bern?
So I can tell you one that we see a lot of is, I hear from the residents that I've talked to, is when it comes time to repair their homes, or if they're going to renovate a home, because it's the historic district, we have lots of regulations we have to go through. There's a lot. We have, and they're there for a purpose. We have, the charm of our town is the historic district. But things, you know, when we try to do things like, you know, repair a window, you want a more energy efficient window, something simple as that. But the, you know, the association tells you have to have a wood window that's going to cost three times the amount of what one that you could make look just like one, and would be more energy efficient. Roofs. The roofs that we're required to put on, these metal roofs, have to match what we were putting on in the, you know, late 1800s, so they'll match it. When there are materials, there are metal materials that are hurricane proof, where those aren't. We do have hurricanes. And, you know, I think the mayor's done a great job with getting the money to help with the drainage and sewage water. I don't know that that's really an issue. I know for some people we do have some. We're going to have standing. We live at sea level. Mm-hmm. We live on the coast, and that's just one of the issues that we're going to face. So that's another one. And I talked to a gentleman that's one of the directors at the marina out there, and now that, you know, both hotels are back up and running at the marina, the both Hiltons, super nice places to be. They've got over 50 boat slips, and they have people that live on those boats, and they've lost parking, so they don't have parking. They had to give it up to the hotel, so that's a concern for them. And they've got some great ideas of how to alleviate parking, so we can have our things like the concerts in the park, Mumfest, and have that, and maybe coming up with some more creative deals, like so we could park across the water and have water taxis. I was in Annapolis, Maryland recently, and they have water taxis taking you from one place to the other where you can park, you know, in an area, and then we don't have to clog up the downtown area. So those are some things that we're looking at. That's what the residents want. I've talked to a lot of my neighbors and in the ward, and those are some of their concerns in their mind too.
You know, it's interesting because back a number of years, I'm going to roll the calendar back a few years, because we were read as New Bern, we were read the Riot Act. We need to also take care of making sure that Cherry Point stays open.
Yes, absolutely.
That really is a big part of New Bern also. Mm-hmm.
And as someone that right now we don't have any veterans on our board, and 40%, no, sorry, let me misspoke, 20% of Craven County are veterans. And so we need veteran services here, but also we have an untapped resource 25, you know, minutes up the road at Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point. The FRC East is one of the largest, you know, employers on the East Coast, in the Eastern North Carolina. And they have some great student programs and money coming in there. And, you know, we've got Bosch and we got some of the other, you know, the industry down in New Bern, but we've got some, and it's growing to be a premier air station, especially with the new F-35s coming in. I have that knowledge, and knowing that we need to work with them. Havelock gets that. They're doing a great job of working with the base, and we need to do that too. But I think having someone that's got that general knowledge and background is going to be helpful on the board.
That's a good point.
And when
I approve her message.
And when Interstate 42 happens, mm-hmm. stand by for the deluge of folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things I've noticed in New Bern in the 26 years that we've been here is a change in downtown. And it seems to be changing quickly. And I'm not a big fan of the direction it's going with everything being a bar and a restaurant. I miss the old Ma and Pa shops, and I'm really very concerned. We don't want to be in Myrtle Beach or a Wilmington. No. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really concerned about the direction, and I understand a lot of it is driven by the owners of the property, and the bottom line being the dollar and the follow the money. Right. But I think we need to maintain some zoning control over what goes into the storefronts downtown so that we don't turn into
a college town.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with a college town. I had fun in my college towns growing up, but I think we do need to look at that and have more diverse shops downstairs, downtown, not just the bars and, you know, that we're having. And it seems like, you know, we're getting bars, we're getting coffee shops, but, you know, we need some more of the, and you've seen some of the little boutiques that they've moved out, you know, and look at that, you know, the affordability for them to be able to stay down there. Can we push out off of just Middle Street and Craven and Hancock and push back farther? Or is there availability for that? Because there's some other great areas. I was at Riverside the other, just think Monday, at a meet and greet, and great people over there. And you know, and sometimes just looking at other options for that.
Agree.
Why should we vote for you? If we live in Ward 1, why should we vote for you?
I think, you know, and I'm going to tell you, being a veteran, I bring a different perspective that. I bring leadership. I have leadership where, and being a female veteran, I can hold my own. I'm a mom of five. I can make my voice heard. And I can command attention if I need it, and I'm not afraid to speak up with that. I'm also, like I said, I've had my career. I've raised my kids. I'm ready to devote my time to developing New Bern in a smart way. And this is not a stepping stone for me for another political office. It's just to help my community and focus on that, and that's where 100% of my effort is going to go.
I think that outgrowth of, if you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean, it's
yes.
That when you see something that needs to be done, you step up yourself.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And you're used to wearing a bunch of hats and juggling a lot of balls at one time. And like you said, you've raised your family, you've mm-hmm. had your career. So you're looking around for what do I fill that hole in my time calendar with? Because surely I've got the ability to gather some more balls. So mm-hmm. I understand your motivation, particularly as a veteran.
Yes.
That's why I ran for office. Mm-hmm. I looked at the way the guy was doing it and went, this.
Yeah, it works smarter, not harder.
Right.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to shift gears. Andy, you want to tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing? It's great to have you here.
Thank you. And since you asked, I will.
Okay. Yeah.
My name is Andy Nilsson. I am from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I am running for the United States Senate. I grew up in Winston-Salem in Forsyth County. I am a high school football coach, and I work with exceptional need children at the same high school that I graduated from 40 years ago. In fact, my high school reunion.
Graduated 4 years ago?
Yes. My high school reunion is next week. And as I've mentioned to a couple folks, I took out a bet with a buddy of mine to see how many of us, when we go to the reunion, have still got our hair.
And
you've already paid off.
No, well, I bet two out of every three will have lost their hair, and my buddy said this would be one out of every two, and I think I'm right. So we'll find out. I've been married to the same woman 26 years, Susanna Critchley. She's an Australian, and I met her on a vacation there many years ago. And we have two adult sons, David, who's 23 and has a head coach of a JV football team, and then my our other son, Joe, who's 21, and he's a wide receiver at Catawba College, which is a little school in Salisbury, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And things were going very well for me. I had been in business for 30 years, managing factory and manufacturing operations around the world in a variety of industries. And I decided a couple years ago to get out of that because I had done well in it, but I really wanted a change of pace, and I wanted to do what I love to do, which is to coach high school football. And so I got an offer from the high school where I graduated from. After my first year there, the principal came to me and he said, "Coach, will you consider working with exceptional need children in the classroom? You seem to have a good manner as a coach, and some of our newer teachers really need help, especially when they've got big classes, anywhere from 30 to 35 kids. It would be helpful to have someone in there to work with the exceptional need children." And those children range anywhere from behavioral and emotional needs to physical needs, wheelchair bound or deaf or blind. And I work with all of them. So I love doing that. And then as if my life wasn't full enough, a year ago, July last year, I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were reflecting on the big disconnect between the senator that we have, Tom Tillis, and his voting record, and a senator that I recall growing up with, who was a formative influence in my life, named Jesse Helms, who held that same seat for five terms. And I remembered that when Jesse Helms ran, there was a tagline that accompanied every ad that he ran on radio and TV, and it always said, "You may not always agree with him, but you know where he stands." And the people of North Carolina had not been marketed that. They really believed it, and they believed it because Senator Helms meant it. And it didn't matter whether he had everyone else in the Senate voting with him or whether he had nobody voting with him. He always did what he felt was right. And I couldn't reconcile that style of representation in the United States Senate with what we had in Senator Tillis. I'm not commenting on Senator Tillis's character. I don't know him, and she's probably a nice person, but I can only go by the voting record. And the voting record was not consistently conservative, and it wasn't in line, most importantly, with what President Trump wanted. So I decided to run, and I announced in January, and since then I've been campaigning across the state, speaking to people from one end to the other, and sharing my thoughts and views, and listening to them and their views. And then 3 weeks ago, a big kind of a wrench got thrown in the works when the incumbent, the senator that I had been running against, decided to not run for reelection. And I have a feeling that one, Donald J. Trump had something to do with that. So now we're in a situation where we're looking at election next year, and who will fill that seat? And I am now speaking across the state talking about what that future vision is.
What do you see as the major problems facing North Carolina that you can be influential concerning in the Senate?
I'll speak kind of generally and then get into specifics. I think generally the biggest problem that we have in our representation in the Senate anyway is a lack of trust. I think what's happened in the last couple terms with the incumbent, who is not running for re-election, is that we've been used to playing a guessing game with him. Mm-hmm. We don't know how he's going to vote on any given issue. Mm-hmm. It could be a conservative vote, and he has cast those. Or it could be a vote for Merrick Garland for Attorney General, which he did vote on. It could be a vote he voted for Pete Buttigieg for Transportation Secretary when Biden was president. Our own quote-unquote conservative senator from North Carolina voting on Pete Buttigieg. I don't get that. I simply don't get that.
And he refused to vote on some of Trump's nominees.
Right. And then once President Trump was in office, we had things like the Pete Hegseth situation. Secretary of Defense, eminent, perfectly qualified. I felt like Pete Hegseth was exactly what the DOD needed. Mm-hmm. He was exactly what the DOD needed because the DOD didn't need another go-along, get-along. And they've had that. Every federal department has had that for too long. You know, Donald Trump's the whole reason that people have, the biggest reason people supported him is because he is a game changer. Because he doesn't accept the status quo as being the law forever. He is willing and able and wants to turn over the apple cart, to try and change things and get people out of their comfort zone. That is who Donald Trump is, and everyone who works for him is recruited to do the same thing. So why should it come as a great surprise or a shock when a Pete Hegseth comes forward, who's absolutely perfect for this job, and then people like Senator Tillis come forward and say, actually, I don't know how I'm going to vote on him. I'm undecided. If you cast your mind back to the circumstances around that vote, he was the only one of 100 senators said, I'm undecided, I don't know how I'm going to vote. All the Democrats are going to vote against him. They told us that. There were Republicans who were going to vote against him, like Mitch McConnell. He just hates Trump, so we knew he was going to do that. The liberals, like Lisa and Susan Collins, they were going to vote against him. They told us that. All the Republicans, the rest of them, were going to vote for him. There was one standout. So what I can't figure out is, how did Tillis not have the information when everybody else did, enough for them to make up their mind to vote? And here's the answer, and this is the most disturbing part. He actually had information. He had information that he had gone out, or his staff had gone out and gotten. And that information had come from Pete Hegseth's ex-wife's sister. Mm-hmm. It was Senator Tillis people who had gone out and got an affidavit from that woman detailing a history of Pete Hegseth that may or may not have been true. But it was Senator Tillis's people who had gone out and got it. And should that tell you? That should tell you that he was not an impartial observer waiting to cast an impartial vote. He was actively engaged in the torpedoing of Pete Hegseth's nomination. And it was only when it got exposed and only when he got called on it that he turned around and voted on it. So at step after step in that whole scenario, he was not demonstrating leadership. He was not demonstrating courage. And he certainly wasn't demonstrating compliance with the president's vision. Instead, it was all about him. And so you ask what North Carolina needs. What North Carolina needs, quite honestly, is more of the example of what I recall as a young man growing up in the form of Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms led the fight against the Panama Canal giveaway. He filibustered on the floor of the Senate against the giveaway. No one else stood there by him. You can go and check it out. You can see it on YouTube. No one else stood with him. And he was right then, and he's right today.
And as you said, he stood based on the principles as he saw them. He was willing to defend those principles.
And this is the thing. That wasn't just the Jesse Helms way. That was the North Carolina way. Mm-hmm. That's what we do in this state. Why do you think they call us Tar Heels? Because we don't move because we got tar on our heels. When we take a stand, we hold it. We stand there and stick there. And that was Jesse Helms. And that's what we need more of. And that's what I'm hoping to bring.
I would just say, based on the resignation or the plan not to run, that's changed the whole election landscape.
Yeah.
So how will you best pivot away from, you know, not worrying about Tillis anymore,
right,
and focusing on where you're headed?
Yeah.
And I think it's good to put the information out there like you just did, but I think it needs to be concise, it needs to be done, and then you say, here's where I'm going. So
absolutely. And, you know, this is the thing. I went to look for my driver's manual on how to be a U.S. Senate candidate when the two-term incumbent running for a third term drops out. I'm looking for the manual for that.
There isn't one.
I'm looking to read somewhere where I can figure out what to do. But guess what? There's no manual for it. So all I can do is fall back on similar situations that happened to me in my life and have happened to us as people in North Carolina. What happens with the unforeseen? What happens with the unexpected? What you do and what I have done is you go back to the tried and true. You go back to what has worked in the past and what will never change. And what has worked in the past and never changed in North Carolina is God, family, and country.
You've
period.
Got guns.
Period. God, family, country, all defended by guns. You can't walk away from that because that's our history. So as we move forward in this campaign without the presidency of the incumbent, what it necessitates is for candidates like me to lay forward a positive vision, to talk about what is the best thing for North Carolina in the future. And the best thing for North Carolina in the future is a conservative, reliable conservative vote that votes with President Trump.
Well, I would propose somehow you knit in here the whole idea of operating in a way that the General Assembly of North Carolina could take your job away. You know, the way the Constitution was once defined, instead of publicly elected, and we've given up all that state power, because I think it's great to have a federal view, but you're there to help us as a state, and I would operate in a way that my life depended on making sure I was doing the right thing for North
Carolina. The representatives represented the people. The senators originally represented the states to the federal government, and
they weren't elected; they were appointed.
That is all very true, and we know that there have been changes to our arrangement over the years, and that's just one. But at the end of the day, it's every eligible voter in North Carolina will be voting on me, hopefully, if I make it past the primary, which I hope to do. That being the case, everybody, every voter in this state, every citizen of this state is who I'm accountable to.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, again, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters and staying with us. And we thank, we're very thankful for having candidates here. And CCTA is a nonpartisan organization. We're 501c3. We will not endorse candidates, but we will allow a platform for candidates to come and speak before us and enjoy time. And again, we're very happy to have you as candidates. Again, we'll extend an invitation to contact Bob at cctaxpayers.com. And
if you'd like to be on the show.
If you want to be on. And Mary just told me to say that. We're going to switch gears now, and we're just going to go to what's happening around the nation right now. And I know, Pat, you don't have anything on Fani.
No, there's no Fani Gate.
We don't know what's going on.
I keep up with Fani Willis. No, the DA down in Georgia is trying to get Trump.
But the New York DA has got some problems with some organizations that she has funded.
I know. Well, it looks like there were wacky, shady bank transactions that she should have been doing something about, and she didn't do anything about them.
Yes.
Yeah, she's shady.
More to come on that.
Well, for myself, the thing that has given me joy is Trump sitting in the Oval accusing Barack Obama of kingpinning the Russia. Because we all knew all this information has come out in dribs and drabs over the last few years, and it all points at Obama, and everybody tippy-toed around him, and nobody said anything or pointed a finger at him when all of the documents point right at him. And Trump just let it blow, and it gave me joy as a prosecutor.
Well, the Susan Rice letter, that memo that she wrote to herself about that January 6th meeting.
Yeah, by the book.
Has been public information for a very long time. And it's been ignored. And
well,
now
they had to ignore it because otherwise she worked at his behest. Mm. So it points right at him.
But all this other information coming out, all this collaborating information coming out, really is going to be a problem. Now, Obama has released a statement saying it's just all ridiculous. And some of the Democrat senators have said, oh, this is all made up. But I think the documents are going to tell a very different story.
Well, Susan Collins, you know, we can always count on her to get it wrong, says that she's sticking with the conclusion that they came to when they
were asked to come to the conclusion?
No, when they did their little with Devin Nunes, that the Russia did try to interfere in the 2016 election. She's sticking with that, even though the ICA assessment was the Russians weren't capable of it.
Well, one of the theories, because we know we had the Mueller investigation, we had the Durham investigation, one of the theories that I have heard is that they were not given access to the information that Tulsi Gabbard managed to get her hands on. And it may be that things were kept from them intentionally or otherwise.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Today is Wednesday, and there was a press conference on right as we were on our way here for the show with Tulsi Gabbard and Caroline Leavitt. And I believe, Pat, that today what they said was that the report did indicate attempts at meddling, but nothing to any degree that would have affected any change in vote or any tampering with election equipment. So they were trying to create chaos and division was what was pretty much said in the press conference today. So they were saying, yeah, that Russia did want to meddle, but they were not successful at it, was what I got out of today. Is that what you got, Glenn?
Yes.
One of the things that has stayed with me about reports I've read about the night of the 2016 election, and I went and checked this. There was a reporter who reported, was at the Hillary camp when it all came down, not the way that Hillary wanted it to, and reported the exact quote that Donna Brazile had previously reported, where Hillary screamed at Donna Brazile, you got to fix this because if he wins, we'll all hang. That's a very interesting quote. Mm-hmm. You don't hang when you lose an election in America.
You hang for treason.
Or you hang for things that you've done wrong. And just the fact that she said that has stayed with me. What was she talking about? And why didn't anybody investigate that?
Well, it's because of who was in power at the time and what the agenda was.
That's
true.
It's
almost a rhetorical question. You look at the Comeys and the Clappers and, you know, the hate Trumpers.
And I think beyond that, they knew they had the media on their side, so they felt like they were confident they could win that whole, you know, public trial.
But that was another thing that hit me. Some of us are old enough to remember Watergate, and it was on the paper every day, on every paper. The news, MSNBC carried this story stating that it was a wild concocted theory, and most of the media has ignored it. You have not heard it on the mainstream media.
What's a wild concocted theory?
This whole idea of Obama being behind the Russia.
Oh, bomb. I see. Yeah. That's a little problem with documents.
I think that Andy Nelson here. I think that the key question is, going back to Watergate, what did the president know, and when did he know it? What did the president do, and when did he give the instruction? The president being President Obama. The key thing is, did President Obama instruct federal employees, in this case, members of his intelligence community and the intelligence leaders, to alter their investigation, to change their testimony, and to change the facts? Is it pertinent if the Russians were trying to influence elections or not? In my mind, not particularly. Why? Because the Russians have always been trying to mess around with our elections and with our process.
And we've never been known to try to mess with or influence anybody else.
That's exactly right.
Well, not now and that USAID
that's right.
is gone.
And that's right. And
at
if
least
you,
since then.
That's right. So, you know, agencies like the CIA were certainly involved in influencing elections in other countries and probably in our own as well. But that's not really the issue. The issue is, did the President of the United States direct federal employees to change testimony and to change evidence? Now, if that's what we're dealing with, then that is very, very serious and needs to be dealt with transparently and punitively all the way through. Have people been messing around with elections? They were messing around with elections when John Kennedy beat Richard Nixon in 1960.
Oh, yeah.
When they used the mafia to get votes for Kennedy in West Virginia to make sure that he had just enough to beat Nixon. And as a result, the mafia, who did their work for John Kennedy and did their work for John Kennedy's father, were not happy with President Kennedy and with him going and his brother going after the mafia, and so they had him killed. That is really the byline of all of this.
That's right.
Is that when you lie down with dogs, don't be surprised when you get fleas. And that has been happening for years and years. This comes down to, what did the president know and when did he know it? And President Obama, if it's true that he instructed fellow employees, and in this case intelligence personnel, to alter evidence, needs to be held accountable for that.
And in today's press conference, that was one of the things that was addressed, was documents that were included in a daily briefing that was to go to the president and president-elect Trump before Trump's inauguration, but after, you know, when Obama was still president. And there was a document relating to this information that was removed before the daily briefing went out to Trump. They didn't want Trump to know what was in that briefing, and that was talked about today. So that was definitely from the Obama administration. Take that document out because he can't see that.
You know, I think an interesting thing in relation to this, from November until the inauguration this past January, Trump refused to get the daily briefing, the presidential daily briefing, because he didn't want to be accused of releasing classified information. So he refused to get it. I can't release it if I don't get it.
Interesting.
So he needed to, he wanted to stay above board.
He knew to protect himself. I mean, I have said before, as much as it would have been nice as if President Trump had had two consecutive terms, it was a blessing that he was not elected in 2020 because he had lost his naivety at that point, and he spent 4 years putting together what he needed to put together to have a much more secure administration.
Something that's interesting when we look at precedent and how the legal system tends to work today, with it being case law, we now have a clear precedent of what kind of crimes you can go after a past president for. Yeah. So did Obama kind of set us up for his own fall?
Yes. And I have always felt that the raid on Mar-a-Lago had to do with thinking Trump had the documents that Tulsi Gabbard just released, and they were trying to make sure that they never got released.
Folks, I'm not going to try to turn it into a religious show, but go and read the Book of Esther with Mordecai versus Haman and setting up the gallows, and all of a sudden the reverse is true.
That was also said at the press conference, was something to that effect of believing that
Mar-a-Lago
raid.
Yeah, that's what they were after.
Yeah, sorry.
The question was asked, did President Obama set it up this way? I would qualify that by saying that President Obama did the same thing that had been done by other presidents. He did what Lyndon Johnson did to get elected to the Senate. Lyndon Johnson was a crook, and he got elected to the Senate in Texas based on vote buying. Once he got in office as president, he functioned exactly the same way all the way through. Joe Biden did exactly what Obama did in letting people run the auto pen and signing over his whole authority on presidential pardons. This is the thing, and this is why President Trump has been so effective. I didn't always like him. I'll tell you that right now. I didn't always like Donald Trump. To me, he was a loud, kind of brash New Yorker, and I'm from North Carolina, and I didn't like all that. I thought that it was just over the top. But what started to change my mind was in 2022, August, raid on Mar-a-Lago. Because what I saw there was I saw an FBI that didn't look anything like the G-men that I grew up with, the models of propriety. Instead, I saw a bunch of commandos jump out of black SUVs. And what were they doing? They were going into the house, but they weren't going in to retrieve documents he shouldn't have. My feeling is, and I think this is probably held by a lot of people, they were going in there to get documents they wanted back. Because there was a lot of stuff. It goes right back to what you said about why he didn't take those briefings. He didn't take those briefings because he didn't trust them. And he knew that the minute his hands were on them, someone else could accuse him of that.
Right.
Donald Trump is pretty smart, and I didn't start liking him. And I tell you what, I love him now because he's that smart.
I think as a person, he has a lot of faults, but I like his policies. But I agree, he's brash and he's arrogant, and I think he's pretty thin-skinned in a lot of ways as well. You know, he gets on his defense about stupid stuff.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters again. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Thank you again for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Again, we ask you to go and visit them also. Mary, you want to take us someplace else, a totally new direction.
Yes. There is a discussion going on right now as to whether illegal aliens who are not citizens and who came here illegally should be counted in the census. And if they're not counted, a number of very liberal states will lose seats in the House of Representatives, and a number of less liberal states will gain seats. So this has become a political issue, even though it probably shouldn't be. And I'm looking for comments from the rest of the panel.
What's the purpose of the census?
To count the people, to
apportion the representatives.
Yeah, to choose the representatives, the number of representatives.
Right. That infers that we're talking about counting citizens.
It does, because illegal aliens have no right to be represented.
They can't vote. They can't vote. So they can't help choose the representatives. So why should they be counted in the census that determines the number?
And it also impacts the Electoral College, because the number of electoral votes that a state has is also related to the number of representatives in the House of Representatives.
Right.
So by bringing in the number of illegal aliens that have been brought in the past 4 years, you can actually skew your presidential election results.
And you mentioned, I know it grows them where there's illegals that are being counted, but you said in conservative states, it would reduce the liberal states, it would increase, would it increase the conservative states? And proportionally it would.
The House of Representatives has a limited number of representatives. So if a liberal state loses a representative, another state will get that representative. Not necessarily a conservative state, but another state.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
If they move from one state to another and they're citizens, I see that shift. If they're illegal, I think it comes out of the math.
But if a state, let's say California, because of not counting illegals, loses three House of Representatives, other states are going to pick up those three representatives because the number is going to remain the same.
Well, let's look at Massachusetts, New York, and a couple of other states lost populations the last time around. We, as North Carolina, earned a 14th representative because of the shift in population.
But that's the first, where somebody moved from this state to that state.
That's
they
right.
weren't eliminated from
they,
the count.
They moved, or they were counted on the census.
Correct.
So if we decided as a state to count not only the people that are in the state, but let's say we picked on the sheep and the cows and whatever else and counted them, we would have a larger population. So if in a state where they're counting not only citizens, but they also count the illegals, they would appear to have a greater percentage of the population.
And I agree with that.
And might earn another representative.
Yeah.
In other words, your number of representatives is going to stay the same, So if one state loses a representative, another state is going to pick it up somewhere. So that's how that works. Any comments?
What's the Constitution say?
It says that you get a representative for 300,000 people.
That's what I was
thinking.
Well,
that's what it is currently, based on the whole population.
So,
you take the whole U.S. population, divide it by 435, and you apportion it over the various states.
So it always stays at 435 representatives?
The House.
Unless they decide.
Well, the House is always
435. It's been raised in the past. It has been raised in the past. It probably will be raised sometime in the future.
So what has to happen to take that? Will it be in a constitutional amendment, Andy?
It's going to have to be a law of some kind because right now it's just the administrative state that says persons includes, you know, it's like an administrative regulation. Persons includes all persons, regardless of immigration status.
When we were in Massachusetts and we had a government in the town that everybody in the town got together and voted on the town's budget. And you had to be a resident living in town in order to be able to vote. Now you might be a non-resident that owned the biggest businesses in town. You had no right to vote on your businesses because you were not a resident.
And we had town meetings.
And we had town meetings.
New England town meetings are an experience. You need to go on YouTube and
find
one.
They're free for all. Yeah. Well,
I maintain that we, not just as a state or a county or as a country, we need to have some permanent, and maybe it would be a constitutional amendment, that says our laws were developed for our citizens.
Yes.
We cannot go to Mexico and expect a free education and free food and a phone and all of those things. We have decided through humanitarian reasons, because the love of people, that we wanted to take care of everybody. But if you look at our county in Craven County, the schools that, Alana, you'll have to deal with if you get elected, the population of the illegal that we're educating who can't speak English. It's a cost to the taxpayer to hire the teachers to teach these kids English so that they can learn, because the North Carolina Constitution says every child deserves a free...
And they have to be mainstreamed into the classroom, and so it's going to take away from our, you know, from when you're working with these individuals and spending extra time on those individuals, too. Yeah.
And I think it was assumed when our Constitution was written that those laws applied to our citizens, not to people coming in illegally from other countries.
And likewise, our benefits applied to our citizens.
Right. It's a matter of resources. I mean, John Leguizamo, who's an actor, was on Bill Maher's show, and he's an open borders guy, and he says, we got plenty of room in the country for more people. That's not the point. The point is, who are the taxpayers that are paying for the schools, that are paying for the hospital ERs, that are touting, you know, giving out all this free health care, the SNAP, the Medicaid, the Medicare, who's paying for all those resources? Mm-hmm. Because they're finite, but they're also expensive.
Right.
We're paying for it.
Right.
And we didn't ask for it.
Right.
By the way, on the illegal immigrants, there is a student that just won $20,000 from the court system, awarded him $20,000. Because in a school discussion, he had said something about illegal immigrants.
Oh, yeah.
And they suspended him from school for 3 days.
And
he just got $20,000 and an apology from the school board.
Good for him.
First year college.
Need more of those.
Some of his tuition.
Processed, if they happen.
I want to hit one more thing before I know we're getting to the end. Zero Hedge is reporting that the shipping company Matson has put in place an immediate policy of refusing to ship electric vehicles that have lithium-ion batteries. And they did this because of the recent ship that caught fire off the coast of Alaska and sank. The Morning Midas was the name of the ship. What kind of pollution did the sinking of that ship put into the ocean? They didn't even try to put the fire out because a lithium fire is, you know more about that than I do, being an ex-fire person.
Can it be put out with water? I don't think so.
Nope. That aggravates it.
And I can say, being a 22-year sailor, the biggest threat to a seagoing vessel is fire, always. And that's your number one.
Yeah, especially when somebody says nearest ground is three miles down.
Yes.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And think of the liability insurance they have to carry on the ship.
Yeah.
So it prices itself out of the market.
So they're not going to be, I don't know how that, I mean, China has undercut the American EV market and is shipping them here, and I don't know how that will impact that. But I thought it was very interesting that the shipping company says, no, we're just not going to take the risk anymore.
We might lose some money on tariffs if we don't let them bring them in.
Well, there are trade-offs. We may get a vehicle without a battery that we have to assemble the battery here or something to that effect. We don't know that. We don't know the bottom. But we do know that people are starting to pay attention.
Well, you notice that all the so-called lefties have quit burning down Tesla.
Yeah.
Because they've moved on. We have a new, thought of the day.
Well, that's because he took on Trump and he,
wasn't
started.
Fun anymore.
He moved to their side a little bit. So anyway, I'm still glad he did good.
I've got
good
a Doge
on Doge
hat that I wear too. It matches my car.
What else do we have? We got about a minute.
I just want to mention that June was the first month in 20 years that we have had a budget surplus. So we are, and we had, of course, the rescission package go through, which is a drop in the bucket, but it's still a drop in the bucket in the right direction. So it's going to take years to make a dent in our debt, but at least we need to start.
Have we been able to get a budget?
That's their priority now, is to work on getting a budget through at the federal level. And they're already talking about likely shutdowns, partial shutdowns, because of we won't have any bipartisan support.
Yeah,
the
last
disruption.
Normal budget process we had was in 2008. We haven't had one since.
Which is disgraceful.
But the trade deals that Trump is continuing to make, yesterday they announced three more deals, and not only are they going to be tariff, but also they're bringing money and jobs and manufacturing back to our country. So he is definitely the art of the deal. I don't know what
investment.
The magic is, but the investment into our country will be permanent. It won't be temporary.
Well, two of the things that bring manufacturing into a country, well, a few things: lower taxes, low cost of energy, and reliable energy. And with Drill Baby Drill and the tax changes, we're seeing those programs put into place.
We're also a big economy.
Yes.
People want to sell to us, so he has leverage. Mm-hmm.
Yes. We are a consumer-based economy, and as long as that stays that way, the world wants to deal with us.
Because
we're a greedy little bunch.
They have to deal with us.
The beauty on the trade deal with Japan was it's like $5 billion that will be spent at Trump's discretion. And they talked about it being in manufacturing and pharmaceuticals and tech. What else, Glenn?
I think it was $550 billion, I thought.
Yeah.
It was a lot
of
money.
And like you said, it was at our president's discretion where it gets spent.
Yes.
That comes from Japan.
Wow.
That was stated today.
And he is a businessman. He knows how to do things.
And I think one of the things that makes Trump so successful and why is because he can't be bought. He's already made his gazillions, and he doesn't care about his next election, for one thing.
Yes.
But a lot of, like we were talking earlier about Senator Tillis, I think what he did was pad his pockets. I think that's what his whole thing has been about himself and not what was best for our state. Trump, he wants what's best for the country.
Yes.
Not what's best for him.
He's a true patriot.
I don't know if we can add anything about Robert Kennedy doing with pharmaceuticals or whatever.
Maha.
folks, there's more
and
to hear.
Junk food is getting healthier. They're putting sugar in Coca-Cola instead of high fructose corn syrup.
More things coming. Folks, thanks for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Have a great week.